Well, this is Low Bi-Lit. If you're not aware, or if you've not listened to this show before, my name's Tyler. Hosting this little podcast where I interview authors, poets, and publishers. Today we got some publishers. Archway Editions is the literary imprint of Powerhouse Books, founded in 2019 by Chris Smolnoff and Nicodemus DeGluz. He is a poet, co-founder, and managing editor of Archway Editions.
Podcasts are a way a lot of people listen to news.
There's Chris Molnar. He is a co-founder and editorial director of Archway Editions. In 2014, he co-founded the Writer's Block, the first independent bookstore in Las Vegas.
The problem with writing fiction is I'm constantly forgetting how to do it. Every time I sit down, I think it's easy to put sentences together, but it'll sound stilted and I'll be distracted for days.
Let's go. Naomi Fulk is a writer, editor, and book designer. She is the production director of Powerhouse Books, the co-founder of the print magazine Nayusaki NYC, and the senior editor of Archway Editions. Instead of going to a sound clip, since she starts off the show, we're just going to go straight to the show. Thank you for Sebastian Castillo for the music. And I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
So we're not an imprint of Simon & Schuster.
Oh.
They don't have any like editorial control or any say over what books we publish. They basically just have our books in their warehouse and their sales reps distribute our books for us. We are an imprint of Powerhouse Books, photo book publisher, founded in 95 by Daniel Power. And basically just means we're like a little sister company. I think that like we can get more into this. There's like a symbiotic relationship, at least on our end, working with a photo book publisher. But I don't know, beyond that, there isn't like overlap in titles or anything.
Yeah, I think like an imprint, probably what exactly that means depends on the publisher. Like I know that for like larger, like big five kind of publishers, it can be hard to tell what the difference is between the imprints, or because they've sort of lost some identity. But for us, it's fairly distinct just in that Powerhouse Books is a photo book publisher, and then we exist, you know, within their, we use their relationship with printers and distributors, but then we, within that, we have our creative control over our own literary books.
Yeah, and it's helpful because I didn't used to do production for Archway, but the past production person for Powerhouse is no longer at the company, and so I was kind of able to take on both roles. So there is some time on the clock at work where I get to do Archway production, which like I think helps a lot of us, you know, on both ends of the company to be able to like know what's going on with the Archway titles. So it's like a little bit more ingrained within the company. Our past person was like working out of somewhere in South America. So he was like in a different time zone and it was always just like a little bit messy. So now that it's just the three of us and then our publicist Mia, obviously, who we love, it's a lot easier and simpler.
Can they take like money or financing away from you if like you do something that they don't like?
Well, I guess we have, other than like the what the cost is to make the book, we don't really have overhead. Okay. So it's basically a yes or no proposition. But we,
do you mean from Simon & Schuster or from Powerhouse?
From Powerhouse.
Oh no, I mean so like Daniel Power, the founder, who was like my direct boss for Powerhouse Books, he's like our guy. He's like, he mentors us, but he lets us take our creative control. We ask him for advice, but he's never like,
Yeah, he's said yes to all of our books, and that's the most important thing, because that means then the books will be made.
I mean, the company is literally just, for Powerhouse, it's me and two other people. And then there's a kids book imprint also called POW, which is one person. And then we help with POW production. And then Archway is the three of us. So it's like the company is tiny. We do a lot of work.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you all go into like the origins of it? Because I was reading about it. And it's like Nico and Chris, you guys are like at a play. And then you guys got like inspired to like for this idea.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of exactly that. Yeah, we went and saw an Ishmael Reed play, and there was no one really there for this play at New Eureka, and it was kind of a weird thing, we thought.
It was the premiere of the play.
Yeah, it was the premiere of the play at New Eureka, and Chris and I have been working in the bookstore for a few years at that point.
This would be the bookstore that is associated with Powerhouse.
The Powerhouse Arena in Dumbo. We've been working there for a few years at that point, and we just kind of came up with the idea of publishing really that book, but at the same time working on the John Ferris book, which is going to come out later this year. So we had these kind of like two nascent ideas, and we approached Daniel about doing something, and he was pretty receptive, and we just kind of like pitched the idea of something, small print, small runs, low overhead, nothing expensive or crazy, just as kind of an experiment at first. And it's just kind of built from that.
But like from the night that you watched the play to the pitch that you're going to pitch to Daniel, like how much did you like sit down like with a script and like script things out for the ideas that you had?
Chris and I had like conversations about it, and we emailed him about it, and he was like, all right, let's meet about it. And so we met him at a bar restaurant in Dumbo called Superfine. And we sat down at the bar with him, and he pretty much was like, yeah, okay, sure. And I think he bought the website.
He pulled up his laptop and he bought the domain while we were drinking.
Yeah. Nice.
While we were drinking at the bar with him. So, I mean, in between seeing the play and that happening was really only a couple months.
It wasn't that long. Yeah.
Like it's like not that big of a deal, but like it is though. Like, have you like done this before? Like in your like creative life? Like,
no, I don't. Chris and Naomi had worked in books previously, but Chris and I had never, we both had done our MFAs, and we were working in the bookstore together. And we'd known each other for a long time previously because we used to work at Luke's Lobster in the East Village. We did produce a zine there for the workers of Luke's Lobster, 2 issues. But we'd never worked in publishing or books outside of working in a bookstore in any capacity before this.
Do you still have like the same like energy and momentum that you did that first night coming up with the idea?
I mean, I think, yeah, like it's always kind of book to book, but like as soon as you find a book that is exciting for you, then it's the same thing, you know, and maybe it's a little bit less of like the feeling of like, wow, like I can't believe we're making a book, but it's also less of how the fuck are we going to make a book, because we've learned so much about it.
Yeah, it's changed obviously in like becoming more, you know, quote unquote professional, knowing a little bit more what we're doing. So that kind of relationship with Daniel has shifted. Before, when it started, we really had no idea what we were doing. So we leaned a lot on some people who used to work at Powerhouse and don't anymore, and kind of learned a lot from them about just kind of the flow, how to actually make something like this happen, printing, that whole process that we had never dealt with before. But Yeah, I think we have the same outlook, same mentality that we had then now.
Can you detail like one of the things that you didn't know about that was a hurdle at first for you?
I think printing was a big thing. I was like, hey, just print a book. Powerhouse is like a big company, and they, you know, Naomi can speak about it. You know, their photo book printers, they print in China, they print in Europe, you know, they're printing around different parts of the world. So we just had no idea how that process worked. And the first printers that we used were in Canada, and we were printing our first books during COVID. So that, you know, trying to print our first books and learn it was kind of all happening at that same time.
Is there anything that you wanted to do initially that was too big for you, or that you still have
plans? We haven't sold out Carnegie Hall yet, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just discovering, you know, what is possible, because we didn't come into it like, I mean, I think we knew the kinds of books that we wanted to do, and obviously some specific books, but like, I feel like I also didn't really realize, because publishing can be kind of insular, like what is possible or should be possible. And I think that was a benefit, is like things like with the last Blake Butler book, where it's just like, that was a kind of a level of success or people talking.
I don't
think
we ever thought that any of our books would do something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely, it almost felt like we're trying to see what we can sort of slip under the radar for a while, and then it sort of becomes a different conversation when things are successful. And then, but that's fun too, to figure out how to level it up, even if that's not something you even thought could be possible.
One of the books I was surprised that you had published was the Stacey like Zizimac one, and the Famous Hermits. I was trying to find her, and like, she's like kind of off grid. Can you talk about like publishing that book and reaching out to her? And how did that all come together?
That kind of happened through Gabe Cruz, whose book we published, one of the first. Gabe got a book from blurb from Stacey, and, you know, kind of in the process of that happening, just said that Stacey was kind of looking for a place for her new book that she was working on. And she sent it, and we liked it. And that was, you know, she was the director of the Poetry Project for a while. Now she's up in Catskill and has done some really cool projects since that book. One on Pasolini and some other smaller works. But yeah, it just kind of happens pretty organically, which I think is how a lot of our books have come to pass. So kind of like a pretty organic process of talking with someone, or someone sends a book, have a conversation, we're like, yeah, we like this.
Have you not worked with like very like independent presses that like work out of their like garage or their like room? And does that relate, do those experiences that you may or may not have had relate to this?
Sorry, I didn't hear the first part of your question.
Have you guys worked with like friends or someone you may know that like had like a very, very small indie press that were just like working out of their rooms of like,
I used to be the editorial director for a small gallery called Key Smith Gallery, run by Key Smith, obviously. And he and I I helped him to open a space in Harlem. And when he opened it, he had all these incredible old like bookbinding machines. So we used to make like exhibition catalogs for every single one of our artists, which was an insane project, but so much fun. And then I used to, before I was like an official Archway girly, I would like print and bind the zines for the reading series that Chris and Nick were doing. So yes, I have experience doing like smaller projects. And I also have like a goth art magazine called Nausicaa that I do with Mina Hamedi, and we self-distribute. And I think all of us have some experience working like in the capacity of being a smaller publisher. Archway is great just because like we have this reach with our distribution because of Powerhouse. But like we operate, I mean, most of the work that we do here is outside of work hours. Our meetings are always on the weekend. Mostly we meet with our authors outside of work hours. We edit outside of work hours. So it still feels pretty small.
And none of us get paid. So
none of us get paid to do our
I feel like we're pretty, you know, we're pretty small. I think that there's a thing where because Simon & Schuster is slapped onto our distribution, there's sometimes this people think that we're kind of like this big operation, but literally it's just us three doing it on our own time, not getting paid to do it.
Vibing.
So none of us get any money for any of this. Yeah.
The advantage of the distribution is really just like, we'll just have like a slightly different set of things that we have to deal with in our spare time than like maybe a comparable small press where like they might have to like, you know, package everything and solicit bookstores individually, whereas we're, you know, bothering printers and like trying to make sure that Simon & Schuster gets into bookstores. You know, it's just like it's a slightly different iteration, but at the same time, you know, we're doing this purely as a labor of love.
So Chris, where did like before this, where have you worked in before? Like Naomi was talking about what she did before.
So I moved to New York in 2010, and then I worked with Nick at Luke's Lobster, as you're saying, for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then I was also working at 826 NYC, the kids' literary nonprofit. And so then my boss there moved to Las Vegas to open a bookstore, and I moved there to help him open that bookstore. And then when I came back, I started working at Powerhouse as a bookseller, and I've also spent a year or two in Los Angeles working as a bookseller and event coordinator. So that's mostly bookstores.
Are you guys going to open up an Archway Editions bookstore?
I mean
the Powerhouse stores are kind of like our stomping grounds in a way.
Because it's the Archway, the titular Archway is the one across from Powerhouse Arena.
Yeah, because the store in Dumbo is right by the bridge. And I feel like even though they're like different, like they are different entities, like Daniel is the CEO of both. And like we have a lot of our events at Arena, whether or not they're directly related to like Archway. Like we have friends who have book launches, like maybe my launch, like I don't know. We do a lot of
your magazine launch.
My magazine launch we have there. Like we use it as kind of like a catch-all for all of our different like community-based passion project things, which Daniel is very like gracious in letting us do. So I don't know if like an Archway store would really have a function necessarily. Because we really showcase our books at all of our stores too. Like they have their own section, everything. I mean they should at every store of it.
So Nico, I saw you have your like your own poetry book that just came out. Would you ever put your own book out on Archway?
I mean, yeah, we've talked about doing that. But yeah, I think eventually, maybe. But I guess, you know, we talked about publishing our own books and stuff like that. And I just think that for myself, I just, you know, wanted to branch out a little bit. And you know, I don't care that, you know, a lot of indie presses publish themselves. I don't care about that. I think that's fine. I think it's great that people do that. But I just, I guess I never really thought about publishing myself on Archway. It just never really was something that I was like, I'm going to do that. Maybe that's my own, you know, psychological condition of embarrassment or something. I don't know. But I just never really kind of thought about, wasn't anything I ever really considered doing.
I'm trying to get Chris to sell me his book so I can publish it with Archway right now. Because I want to.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's just like doing publishing, you realize just how much work it is to like make a book. And then the idea of it also being your own book, it can feel sort of overwhelming. Yeah. Like you need somebody else to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, someone else to like keep you to deadlines, make you do stuff, like, you know, kind of push you along that process, because, you know,
how well, and to like share the responsibility, you know, not be like, if nobody likes it, then it's like completely my fault.
Yeah. Also, you're right.
It's crazy to me how like how much like just inherent trust there has to be for like a publishing industry to exist. Because like, I mean, I've done small presses. I also worked at MoMA, you know, I've done my fair share of whatever over the years. And just seeing like how many times these relationships can sour so quickly based off of, you know, not even like significant things, small line edits. Like I'm scared, like I would be scared to piss off my editor or like vice versa to piss off my writer. So I don't know. It's crazy to think about publishing within your own company and like all the things that could go wrong with your own people who like, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. We never even had that conception when we founded it. You know, Chris and I were both working on books when we found this and like still are. I don't think we ever have had a conversation at first that we ever said anything about publishing our own books at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it definitely felt like, I don't know. I might just say something about our own weird like perspective on things that we're just like, oh, it'd be way cooler to publish other people.
Are there people that you specifically like wanted to publish that you heard maybe they weren't able to get a book published?
Well, it's definitely those first two with it. With the Ishmael play, where it hadn't even really been conceptualized as a book, or else, I mean, then John Ferris, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like in general, the thing with our acquisitions is that because, like, and this is what I say when I have to reject something that I really like, even, is that, like, I literally have one book that I've edited coming out this year in the spring. Wait, do I even?
Next year?
Well, we got Olivia. We have Olivia together. Yeah. But actually, yeah, no, both of my fall and spring author weren't able to get their manuscripts in on time. So it's like we only do so few books per year because it's a volunteer thing. We have our full-time jobs. So it's like in order to like something, it has to be like a 105% overlap in terms of aesthetic, in terms of prose style, in terms of like, you know, like the things.
And vibing with the author too, you know, you have to vibe with the person too is such a big part of it.
Yeah,
like it has to feel so natural that it's something that you're just so excited to do when you get off of work, you know, or otherwise it's just, and that is not.
Then it's a job.
Do you sometimes not vibe with the authors? And that like ruins the process? No. So you vibed with everyone?
No. Yeah, I mean, everyone we worked with is like incredible. Like I've had such good experiences. My two books that were like under my charge were Lindsay Webb and Claire Donato, and they're both just like angelic gifts to the earth. I have like holy praises.
And that's one of the fun things about publishing is just, you know, it's an excuse to reach out to people and get to know them, you know, and to have this like connection where you've done their book. And that's I don't know, it's not, because we came into this in such an odd way, it's not something I'd ever really thought about before, but it's really rewarding.
How does like the marketing process like work? Like when the book gets put out, do you guys have any control? I mean, outside of putting on your own readings?
I mean, we really do. It's kind of DIY because we just post to our Instagram when we have time to, and we cross post to Twitter. And now our publicist is like helping getting our ducks in a row and like doing outreach. But sometimes our authors have publicists attached, sometimes they don't.
And Simon and Schuster offers, you know, Simon and Schuster does have like a team of like the people who go to bookstores to sell books, you know, and they'll push it on, you know, kind of the
somebody like me,
book selling websites, you know,
because I'm the front list book buyer at Powerhouse, so it's fun to see both ends of it. Like I'll talk to the Simon & Schuster rep both as a publisher and as a bookseller, so you know, just being like, and that's, it's good to know that, you know, when she's talking about her Simon & Schuster distributed catalog, that it's you know, that this is how she's talking to other people, and I can talk to her about the books. But then beyond that, most of it is like we'll actually do outreach to try and send out the books to different outlets.
Yeah, I think like when I say DIY, I don't mean like obviously our reps are great, like glad that we have this relationship, but because we're just such a small company, I think that our titles until more recently have been a little bit overlooked by our sales reps.
Yeah.
Can't be explained, but
well, it's a natural thing where like if the longer a press has been around and the more like attention it has had in the past, the more attention that, you know, booksellers or sales reps or readers will pay attention to it. And that's, so it's been nice to feel like we have more eyeballs on our books than we did when we were starting. And just for the completely natural reason that people have heard of us, you know, like sure, some people have.
And I try to like also keep my eyes on, like I'm on TikTok. So I try to look at book talkers, people who talk about like literature as opposed to more like kind of like romantic stuff or whatever, who's reviewing books on Instagram. Like in Seattle, I'm from Seattle, so I'm familiar with the stores there, and the booksellers there are all like masterful book reviewers. So I'm always looking at their pages, wanting to send them our books. So it's kind of just like staying plugged in,
building relationships,
every avenue possible all the time. But it's like when this is your life, it's become so easy, and it's like fun to get to know people and to share your project with them. So it's not really like, you know, doesn't feel like work sometimes.
Is there a point at which you guys would get paid? Like if it was like a massive booming success that's been bigger than anything you would have ever realized?
Maybe.
At what point do you get paid? I don't know.
I feel like because we are also, so it's like we're a very small publisher, but we print in bulk. So we do offset printing. So it's not print on demand, which is the model of a lot of our counterparts. Like the financial like structure of the company looks like much different. And we also have royalty systems for our authors. So I just don't know at which point it would ever really be like extremely profitable. We would have to be doing like, I think, more books, mm-hmm. which would mean we would need more time. But like, I'm not... like as much as it would be great to get compensated, it has no bearing on whether or not I think I speak for all three of us when I say it has no bearing on whether or not we want to be doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you guys going to keep it just within yourselves, or are you going to try and grow it out?
I don't know. I don't think we're going to hire anyone else.
Friends.
I think we're doing pretty good. I mean, I guess the question that you're kind of asking about is about like growth. Are we trying to grow? Are we trying to get bigger? In my perspective, I would say like, I think we occupy a pretty good space and good size. Like, I wouldn't want to become like Grove or something, you know, become too big, because then you get lost for what the fuck you're even doing anymore. Then you're just, you know, you're just FSG at that point. And then what the fuck are you doing? You're just another publisher.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you have to maintain that, like, keep your own ambition in check before you go down a road to which you're just becoming just another publisher that exists.
Yeah. Like any growth has to be natural. And like with books and hypothetical other people that are like on the same wavelength, they're all you stop being yourself.
Yeah, like even today, yesterday we were talking about the Hachette versus Internet Archive. So sad. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it was one text and we all agree. And we're like, oh yeah, we want to post something about it. But it's like, the minute you add three more people to the equation, that it's like somebody, you know. But it's like ideologically, we're all aligned. We respect each other. Our debates are good debates. They're generative. And I feel like I can trust making Chris with my life. So I don't know. It's just, it's so easy when you, and we all have our own areas of expertise, but I think it's really easy to run a company when there isn't this, like, all of this hierarchy, both like this way and like on the X and Y axis.
Cause you'll hear about these, like, what was that one? There's that one magazine that imploded recently, the literary magazine. And you just sort of came out, you realize like, oh, there's like 20 people that work here and they don't really know each other. Is that Guernica?
Yeah.
just talking out of pocket here, but it's just like, you know, that you just sort of realize, because you don't really get a lot of insight into like how a lot of these places are built, you know, the literary organizations. And it just seems like regardless of the size or the kind of literary organization, it's always good to just have, you know, people who like agree and are like actually friends. And, you know, like if it's too spread out, I'm just, it, you know, it's hard to be a united front or to do anything that's specific.
So you're taking it like,
yeah, I mean, there's enough like people with unscrupulous ambition out there that'll yep. fill that void.
Yeah.
So are you taking things like one book at a time pretty much, and not like you don't have like a 10-year plan or something?
One day at a time.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, it's pretty loose even in terms of like submissions. Like this summer I wanted to open my submissions and take a book, but like I just didn't have time. And then, you know, like we are very allowing of our authors to miss deadlines and to reconfigure things. And so then someone doesn't come through, you're not just like immediately replacing them. Our books have to be ready pretty far in advance, both because of our distro and because of our shipping times from printers, whether they're overseas or like in Canada. So yeah, I think it's kind of just like really running on vibes.
I think there's a certain kind of book that is just like works for us, you know, like, and I don't think it's the sort of thing that you can like expect or you know, like it or try and pursue. Like it's there's books where like they make sense for a small press with distribution, and they'll naturally come to us. And I feel like it's not in this, and that's part of the reason why it's one book at a time.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the process of getting Aaron Taylor's Bimbo Land?
Yeah. We kind of knew Aaron tangentially through a friend, and I think I just DM'd them on Twitter and asked, hey, like, I've read some of your poems before, like,
oh, because they had
working on a book at all.
They'd been featured in Unpublishable in our,
oh, yeah, right,
which was an old
Aaron had read for us. Yeah, Aaron had read at a thing, and I just reached out to them and said, hey, I've read your stuff for a degree. I like what you've done. Do you working on a book? Do you have a book? And they were like, yeah. And they sent it to me. And yeah, it kind of happened just like that. You know, again, another one of those kind of organic relationships that feels like kind of the way I would want to pursue it and do what I want to do. I mean, in the whole purpose of doing this is to, you know, publish people that you find are interesting, who are cool, who do good work, and again, I think are operating under the same ideas that we like, have that understanding that we're going to do everything we can to get your book out as far as we can. But we're not trying to, you know, we're not going to censor you. We're not going to tell you what to say or what not to say. You know, we don't have a boss. You know, Daniel is never going to say like, don't do this or don't do that. Don't print this or don't. He doesn't even read, honestly, probably half the books anyway. I mean, not,
he's got his own.
He does. He's got his own life. He's got his own photo book publisher to work with. He trusts us, right? And we built that relationship over years of working at the bookstore and talking to him, getting to know him over the years, and having some success. You know, he trusts us at this point to know what we're doing. Yeah. So it was really just kind of a same thing. I mean, the same thing with like Alice Notley's book was a similar kind of like, I saw her posts on Instagram, the drawings, and I sent her an email and said, hey, these are sick. Like, would you want to do an art book of these? And she said, yeah, sure. And that was it. I mean, that's how Paul Schrader happened too.
Yeah. I emailed him and then like a half hour later, you know, if you'd want to publish First Reformed, and then like half hour later, it's like, sure, you know, sent from iPhone, and that's it.
Yeah. It's amazing how available people are sometimes. You realize that.
What are some issues that you have with the big five publishers?
First, they pay people shit. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
They don't pay people well at all. That's problem number one.
Well, they don't, you know, you're paying like employees nothing to like have no power. I feel like that's the other thing, is there's no agility. And like, so, you know, if you're coming in to work at a big five publisher and you're young and idealistic and you, you know, want to be an editor, you come in and you realize like, okay, I'm getting paid less than I would as a bartender, and I can't actually choose any books that I want because there's huge bureaucracy. And then at the end of the day, if like the head of the company is like, you know, we'll read the manuscript and be like, I don't think that, you know, so you're just beholden to these people forever, you know, because nobody's, if you're in a position of power there, that you're not moving. And so then thus it's the same stuff year in, year out.
Yeah. And I think it's just like the same, like obvious flaw with any big company is that it's like, you will always be like, whether you like it or not, a little bit represented by the company's interests, by its investors, by the other books that are published by other imprints. So it's like, you might have fucking, I don't know, XYZ, Jeffrey Epstein's like a autobiography coming out, but you're at like the, you know, you have a young editor who's cool, who's a leftist, who, you know, believes in human rights and stuff. But meanwhile, you know, like this other book is going on and it just kind of fucks you, you know, from the top down. And I think that's not necessarily criticism of the, like the big five per se, but of a corporation or of big companies.
I mean, at the end of, like you're saying, at the end of the day, it's like, this is a, these are corporations, and the same thing that sucks about any corporation kind of sucks about them too, right? Like they're bad working conditions for young people, have really bad internal politics towards people, you know. And then on the kind of book side, like Naomi's saying, I agree. It's like, it's this bind where, yeah, I mean, like there's some imprints of the big five put out good books. Like they put out books that are worth reading, and that's fine. But I think generally, yeah, I agree with what Naomi said. There's just like, it's such a big company that they're putting out like insane right-wing books while you're working on something in a totally different area that you have no control or way to affect it, really.
I was just going to say, like, I was still working in Moments Publications. I was in Union Local 2110 while HarperCollins was going through their union negotiations and on strike. So I would go to their strikes, and then I would sometimes come to their celebrations after to, like, you know, whatever. We have a friend who was there at the time. And it's just like the things they were asking for, it was just so despicable to me that they couldn't even just get like an iota of movement for all these days and all this time off of work, and how much that affected their authors and their mental health for crumbs. For like, and you know, they got some things that they asked for, but even then it's like not good enough. Like the raises that they got weren't good enough. And it's like, thank God unions exist, you know, but it was just very... part of the reason that I came to this company to work for Powerhouse is because I just couldn't continue to stomach working for these places where, like, you don't mean anything. You might mean something to your boss, or, you know, the mission of the company might mean something to you, but it's like, it's nice to get away.
If you ran like a big five, how much would you pay people?
I would never, because I can't imagine structuring a company like that.
Well, the good example is Norton, right? Where it's employee owned.
Right.
So I think that would probably be the ideal, something like that.
Do you guys still keep in contact with like people like Aaron?
Like who?
Like Aaron Taylor. Do you still keep in contact with the authors after they publish the books?
Yeah, I talk to Aaron every once in a while. Yeah. Some more than others, you know. Aaron moved to LA, so I don't really see them that often.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, every once in a while we'll kind of chat about this or that.
Okay. So do like each of you like take on a book as like your own project?
Yeah, I think that, you know, books, there's some crossover like with the Olivia book that we're doing together, but mostly, you know, there'll be Nick books, Naomi books, Chris books.
So what's like a Chris book? Is there like a certain style or aesthetic?
I don't know.
What did your call for submission say? It was cute. It wasn't successful, but it was a cute call.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I feel like my taste is very specific. Cause I was like I love like Laszlo Krasznahorkai and then like the films of Rainer Fassbinder. And it's like, I want that kind of like, there's a certain kind of, I don't know, sharpness and astringency that I really value, but it's hard to find. But yeah, no, I don't know. The Molly, I guess, was the last book that I did.
Oh, really?
And then coming up, like the John Ferris one I'm doing with Nick.
When that article came out in that, I forgot what magazine it was, some tabloid magazine with Butler, did that like piss you guys off?
Yeah, I mean,
it was goofy. It was stupid. I mean, it's obvious that's what tabloids want to do. They just, you know, they want to paint a certain picture about a relationship because at the end of the day, they're trying to sell magazines too. You know, they're trying to sell newspapers. So I don't know. It didn't really piss me off. It was just kind of it was just silly. I mean, it was really more kind of the reaction afterwards where people took that reporting seriously was kind of the like thing that bothered me more than like, you know, any media literacy would tell you. I'm reading like the New York Post or the Daily Mirror. I should probably read this with a skeptical eye. But you know, that people kind of took that angle seriously is what, you know, smart people who are literate, who are in this world or whatever, who readers, writers, took that seriously is the thing that kind of confused me more than anything.
So what was the process of like acquiring Molly from Butler?
It was his agent reached out to me unsolicited. I mean, I think we
he found out about us, right? Our existence, because Chris had actually reached, so it's kind of a funny story.
Yeah.
So Chris had reached out to Claire Donato for one manuscript.
Well, and so this was because as in my long, you know, I had been doing events at Powerhouse and I organized an event which featured both Blake and Claire. And this is years and years ago. But I saw on Claire's bio that I had to read out that she was working on a book about Gummo, the movie by Harmony Crane, which is one of my favorite movies. So I emailed her and I was like, I'm starting a publishing company. Do you want to publish this book? And she's like, it's not done yet, but I have this other book. And so then we were doing Claire's book, and Claire's boyfriend was working for Blake's agent at the time and informed him of our existence.
And then Bill says, he said, who's publishing Claire's book? And Nick goes, Archway Editions. And Bill Clegg said, who's that?
So that, you know, this is how these things happen.
But now you guys are pretty known, so you have like a solid reputation. Do you feel that way?
Well, I mean, it's everything is relative, you know.
Yeah.
Compared to other, like,
do you not care
about
like what people think of you? You're just gonna do what you want to do.
Yeah, because I feel like I don't know so. About
you worry too much. You care about people, then it's like you know, it's just again, it's kind of like I don't know. Yeah. Who cares? That's how I feel. We do cool stuff and people like it. Like, yeah, you know.
There's nothing
it's
beyond
not a big deal
the work itself.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, it's such an incredible dream and an honor to like be able to edit and publish books that like you select, that you believe in. And we're all writers too, you know, so it's like we get it. And it's like, that's what this
and
is about.
It's a privilege to have anyone care at all. And, you know, as long as they're actually reading the books and taking it seriously, that's what matters. Like, because, you know, there's plenty of very large publishers that don't really have an identity in any way, and you can sell all sorts of books and people can be aware of your mark, but then they don't really care. Then it's not what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any, like, I guess, like, myths or anything in the of the publishing world you want to dispel that people may think of Archway? I don't know.
I got one. This is publishing generally. Books do not sell as much as people think that they do.
Yeah.
Real.
Big books that have come out, I'm not going to say which ones or who, that have come out and been like huge cultural splashes have sold very little copies.
That's the thing. You look at BookScan and it's just like the stakes are nothing, you know, for like books that are like buzzy or whatever, like in the, they're getting articles in the literary culture. It's like, wait, okay. So just like some total, maybe like a couple hundred people read this. And it's like, you know, that's exciting for anybody who wants to be in publishing, or it should be exciting because it means that it's like, there's not a barrier to entry here. Like, it's just, you want to participate, just join.
Yeah. Wait, do you know the number?
Writing a book for like 1,000 people, I would say.
You
know, like 1,000 people in America.
The numbers are on BookScan, we have a BookScan login. So anybody can look. And I feel like it's like, I feel like Nick's not saying that because we're trying to like make fun of people, but I also
No, I'm just saying that's just like a reality.
There's a reality of it, even for us, you know. Yeah. Molly didn't sell what a Big Five book of that its kind would sell. I mean, there wouldn't have been a Big Five book of that kind, but also I think it's important to
because they rejected it.
Because they rejected it.
Right. Yeah.
But I think it's important for people to keep what Nick is saying in mind, because there's a lot of like tales all the time, like culture warping that happens when people are writing articles about their friends and blah blah blah. And like, of course, we all participate to a certain extent. Like, when I have a book coming out, am I going to be asking friends for favors? Obviously. But I think it's like our perception of what the independent publishing landscape looks like is very shaped by certain pieces of media and things, and it's like you just don't have to talk about it if you don't want it to be a thing. Like, if you don't like something,
I think
quiet about it. Even
I think that's what it is, and that wasn't meant to throw shade on anyone, you know. Yep. Whatever, like, I, you know, sell your books, you know, selling 500 books to people, that's amazing. Like, that's amazing that like 1,000 people would want to read your book, right? This isn't meant to throw shade, but I think it's just recognition of the kind of material reality that exists around book publishing. Yeah. That
exciting,
we, you know, exist within, which is it's exciting
souls, you know, than the
it's million. And it's exciting, right? You just have that lens to say, this is who I care about, and these are the people that I want to reach, and this is the amount of people I want to reach, and like, fuck everyone else, you know. You're not going to sell 10,000 books. I mean, who gives a fuck if you would?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have, you know, the biggest to try and this is the fun thing about DIY publicity, is just trying to find the biggest audience you can. But it's also like, what that is what it is, you know. And obviously, we'd love to have all of our authors sell as many books as humanly possible. But it's also, there's the material reality as well.
And like, I also want our authors to feel like taken care of, and that the way that publicity and discussion is generated around their books isn't contrived and isn't cheap. You know what I mean? So it's like, we try to be very mindful in our approach to how we handle their work and their reputations. Well, not that we are handling them, but we're helping them to develop it. And we try to take their lead on this as well. So it's kind of just, I think that there's something that a lot of people don't do, which is engage very carefully with publicity and marketing with books.
But for us, I think it's natural because we're doing this in our spare time. So it's like, this is like our social life anyway. So that's, you know, like, this is what we're doing. We're doing for fun is publicity.
Can you talk about that process a little bit more, like in detail, like with regard to publicity?
Well, I mean, I always think of it like, because it's what I've experienced at working in bookstores, is just like thinking about events in bookstores, because that's something that's really tangible to me. And then I think something that's like less tangible to me, but that we still, you know, love to pursue, is just trying to get the book into the hands of as many people who might like it, who write about books, who talk about books.
Yeah. And like, on a more technical level, I like made a spreadsheet when I first did my first round of publicity, actually for Claire's book. I was helping Claire do some publicity. I wasn't as helpful as I wish I could have been, but
I have a spreadsheet, and then I just put in names of, you know, there's like a column for possible reviewers based on who the author may be friends with. There's a column for who's going to get an arc, whatever. It's like very archaic use of an Excel spreadsheet. And then, you know, you're like scrolling on the old block and you see so-and-so wrote an article about so-and-so's book and you think that they might like, so then, you know, I text Mia like, oh, blah, blah, blah. So it's pretty like easy, not really a chaotic thing. And like also people don't flock to books. People gravitate towards things they like anyway, so we get reached out to.
Yeah, and that's really nice. Fun about, you know, the longer that we're doing it, the more people are just asking us what's going on and what do we have next. And that's, it's easier for us and it's fun, you know, because it means that they actually want it and we're not bugging somebody.
Yeah.
Well, I saw you guys were like maybe starting a podcast on YouTube, like your own thing.
Oh, like doing the videos.
Archway, what's it called? Archway Video Edition. Video
Edition. Yeah. Are you guys going to continue doing that?
As me as.
I mean, yeah, why not? Yeah. I feel like we're just trying to kind of create life for the book outside of the context of its launch. Because, like, and this is another thing that I will say about very big publishers is that it is centered around the launch. And I think, for me at least, I would like to see a book's life, like, continue, you know, into the future. So it's, like, doing these little things with our authors, whether it's the editor interviewing them or whatever, is good for the lifespan, it's like keeping it fresh.
With our friends who may have books out with Big Five publishers, a lot of it is learning from, like, what they're not getting from their, you know, publishers.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, you know, the things that we can do.
So you guys, you said you can see like how many books have been sold. Has the small press distribution, that blow up, has that affected the sale of books from what you've been able to see?
I mean, I guess you'd have to track.
You'd have to look.
I feel like Asterism picked up folks pretty quick.
Yeah, they're doing like, I mean, they're doing God's work. It's so crazy to see how quickly they like pulled it together. I see they're hiring new jobs. They got their warehouse all online. They did a sale at the warehouse. Like, they're so amazing. How important
it is to have people who are excited about doing like the almost incomprehensible, like way background drudgery of publishing. Cause it's like, that's how books happen. It's like, you're not going to see them if there aren't folks like Asterism, like figuring out how warehouses work.
Yeah. I have to imagine that they're going to keep things in line. They're great. I mean, even like when I've had questions about books I've ordered, they like, they pick up the customer service line and they like email me after. They're so good.
So did the small press thing, did that have an effect on any of what you guys were doing?
Not really. Cause we just don't have any books with them. So, you know, it didn't affect us. Yeah. We have friends who, were affected by it, who had books in their warehouses and in their warehouse and stuff, and had to fight and everything to get stuff back. But SPD was bad for a while. It wasn't great for a while.
I heard they didn't treat their workers very well either, like you guys were talking about.
Yeah, they had some issues a few years back. I think that the writing was kind of on the wall for them for a while. I mean, not to say that anyone expected them to close overnight the way they did, but I think, in hindsight, one can look at kind of the past year before that and say, yeah, they were not doing great financially.
Would their YouTube like interview series, would you guys ever like interview like other indie like presses that are like smaller than you?
I mean, I don't see why not. I don't know what, like maybe is like a discussion from one publisher to another, like could be fun. We love our colleagues.
Yeah, we just did that.
Just had an Indie Lit summer publishing party where we like invited a bunch of different like magazines and publishers and had like a reading and drinks and everyone sold their stuff. So we're here for that community.
What are some of your favorite like other presses that are out there?
Who wants to start?
Wow, there's a lot. I really like Nightboat Spiral Editions, I think, do really good poetry books. Are kind of, I think, my two favorite small poetry publishers at the moment. Birds LLC does a lot of great stuff as well.
I really like Wonder, Inside the Castle.
Yeah, Wonder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know Wonder? You know Ben?
Yeah, I love Ben. He's great.
Yeah, we had, they came out to the Indie Lit Fest.
Yeah, Ugly Duckling.
And there's obviously like the big girl, like New Directions, like that sort of thing. They're pretty unimpeachable.
Yeah.
Well, I just read my first Atana Media book because we were at the Bomb Festival. We got invited at the last minute. And I was like having galaxy brain because I didn't know anything about them. And then Chris and Nick were like giving me some tea. Because
our author, Taylor Lewandowski, did a really great interview with
Jim. And I didn't know he was like kind of the founder of Simiotext, which is why those original Simiotext books were so good. I had no idea. So now I'm having kind of like a mental publishing reawakening. So like I just discovered this cool new, to me, press who does so many books that I want to read. But it's like that always happens. There are always these little things that kind of creep out, and I feel like I'm always hearing about new projects. There are a lot of cool magazines that are popping up right now. Splashland is a new one that I think is really great. They do like literature, art, music, Gen Z,
young, I think that's Jewish, queer, that's women. The fun thing about small presses is that they're like, you know, these ones that have been around for a while, like it's like it's often just like one or two people that are doing it. And so it has like an incredibly, they'll have an incredibly distinct point of view, like Jim at Autonomous Media or even like Semiotext now, you know, it's just different, not Jim, but it's still like, just like heady. And it's like, there's, when you just get like 10 or 20, 30 years of a press like that, it's just, you're just getting lost in somebody's curatorial vision. And it's really exciting.
Definitely. I want to like
any other kind of art. That's why books are the best.
I want to work on discovering more foreign publishers. Like I don't really speak, I speak French, and I don't speak any other foreign languages, but I would like to like kind of, if people are publishing in English overseas or bilingual editions, that's something that I would like to become privy to when I have time eventually.
Yeah. And that's the other funny in other countries. It's like comically robust and like, in like the UK, because you have more like government help to like help you start your little press. So there's,
it's, oh really?
Yeah. So well, like in any,
probably kind of, Sweden,
in any country,
way,
really, because they, you know, there's like a ministry of culture and like anywhere else where like this is, you know, we needed to encourage the arts. And so like, yeah, so that's why you have so many cool presses.
Has any of your books ever like, does anyone try to make a movie out of it? One of your books? How do you even navigate that?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I feel like our list is honestly too strange for anything to like, because Claire Donato's book is kind of more like, I feel like the prose is interpretable for like a wide audience, even though it's very strange. So that could be our most movie-ish book, but even then, I don't know. So, like, do so many weird projects. I don't.
Are there other like forms or genres that you want to like get into, like a graphic novel?
I mean, I
would like to do some more nonfiction, maybe a philosophy book or something like that, aesthetics book, something in that vein. I think would be interesting to work on.
Would you ever start like a print like magazine? Like you, I know you did the Unpublishable. Would you make a ongoing series?
Well, we have an online journal.
I don't know.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's true.
Like magazines are, even journals are so like
time consuming.
Yeah, it's kind of
a lot of work.
It's so crazy to me to think about the amount of work that goes into a journal, and yet how there's like this built-in ephemerality to it, which makes it like kind of a noble cause, but at the same time, it's like with like fewer and fewer newsstands. It's like wild to me that they exist, you know, because it's just even like for our journal, which is just, we're not even doing columns or something, you know, or printing. It's like, it's just so much work that's going into something that's just like, there it goes. You know, that's the one thing that I like about books is that there's something of a permanent record there.
Yeah, I know with magazines too, those don't sell very well either. I remember Giancarlo talking about starting the Tyrant magazine, and like he would do the launches and he'd throw these parties and like all these people would come, but like no one would actually buy like the magazine.
Yeah.
That even happens with book launches. Yeah. It's so crazy. It's like, why the fuck aren't your friends buying your book? Like, why else did they come? Just to like hear you read? They probably heard it before. No shade, but like it's really crazy. Because our books are affordable too.
Yeah, we're
gonna get wild. But people don't be buying that many books.
How'd you come up with the design of the books?
I think, well, we were just thinking about, well, this is before Naomi came on. Me and Nick didn't really have a design background. It's like, what, we gotta have something that we can just do ourselves that doesn't require like a design background, and also influenced by how great books look like in Europe, where they don't have any kind of blobby color bullshit, or you know, the sans serif fonts, you know, or like, that are going behind the blobs. Like, it's just like they all look the same, they all look good.
Yeah, we're starting to play with the covers a bit more. Like Nick did something a little different for Lynn, still kind of within the form, but like different color palette. And obviously Blake's Void Corporation is totally different. Probably Olivia's will be a little different, but we still want to use the classic form here and there. If an author wanted to use it, we would be happy to do that.
Yeah, no, it's good because we have like a baseline that we can deviate from. You know, we have a rule that we can break.
But like the trim size should stay the same. And like, I still want to do the more like if we're doing a book that's more of like a memorial type project or whatever, I could see it still inhabiting the classic design. But I don't know, it's fun to play with it a little bit sometimes.
So earlier talking about how you wish like there's more focus on like the life of a book. Are you guys ever going to go back and like the first books that you published and like put focus on them, or like throw an events for them or something like that?
I mean, anytime an author wants to do an event for their book, they could just email us.
Yeah,
but, like they, and I think they know that. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of it is just like lining up schedules and like planning together. Like, this is like the X anniversary of this, you know, like trying to get it so that it doesn't feel arbitrary. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah, just like finding new ways for new audiences to, you know, to find it. Even on our own page, like we have some old backlist that's like kind of strange that I think people don't know about. So it's like just kind of remembering to like bring it to people's attention over and over again, because you always have new people looking at what you do.
And would you guys ever put out like some sort of publication that like shows how to put your own thing together, like Archway?
Like, what's the book by the KLF, like how to write a number one single?
Yeah, doing something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's hard because it's like, because particularly our journey is just so
different,
random and unique.
Yeah, it's not that hard. People can figure it out.
Yeah, I think it's literally just like, you know, being like, okay, so what are my assets? What's my angle? It's, you know, like what do I have that somebody else doesn't have, and then just going for it, because there's so many different ways to do it.
When you were coming up, like 10 years ago, who were the presses that you, did you ever want to be involved in them? Any other small presses? Were there small presses you wanted to work for?
I never, when I was, I did an English degree at Brooklyn College, and then I did an MFA, but I never really wanted to work in publishing before this, to be honest with you. I did some writing. I figured myself as a writer and a poet. I'd never thought about publishing at all before we started this.
I think it's also just
so,
that,
you know,
didn't feel accessible. Like, I remember when I moved to New York like 14 years ago, like just applying to any writer, you know, any free internship, and just like getting no response or like mean responses.
Yeah. Or it's like I didn't have the money to like do a free internship for, you know, Paris Review, where you have to work basically nearly a full-time job.
And even then you got to like have the background to get the free internship, if you're able to do the free internship, you know, it's just that sort of thing. So it's easy. Like, yeah, high school, I thought McSweeney's was cool. And so then that was why I wound up working at the nonprofit that was sort of related to it. It was because like way back then, like that was like, they took up so much oxygen. You know, I think that's like an example of something that like, there's a whole different era, but like, it's easy to forget like how much of a big deal they were back then.
So, I think also like at that time too, in like the early days of alt-lit, like so much of everything was like online.
Right.
Like, online journals, online publishers, you know, that was,
and that was kind the whole of the thing. Is that it was online, you know.
Yeah, I didn't even think about like physical. I mean, obviously I bought books from people, but like my mind was like reading stuff on blogs and reading stuff on like online journals, which was like kind of this burgeoning thing, right? Like 2011, 12, 13, whatever.
I was surprised by some of the authors that you guys got for like unpublished, because they're like, there's some of the writers like I know, like Mary Boo, like Andy Tran, like it's really impressive. You guys like have your hands in like small indie spaces.
Well, we knew Mary.
You do?
She was a friend of a friend kind of situation. And Andy too was that kind of too, right? Another kind of a friend of a friend type of person.
Yeah. I think that's where when it feels organic like that, that's often how it is with us, because I don't like.
Because all of that was built out of a reading series. So it was inherently like kind of people that we had known or like new friend of friend type of situation.
People that like worked in the bookstore with us or people that they knew, you know.
Like I was in the book, and I think it was before I was really part of way, but they like published.
We went to school together.
We went to school together, which is how I knew Chris. Oh. Because I knew Chris, I knew Nick. So I got published in those early ones, and in the first Archway anthology, just because I knew them. And apparently they don't think my writing is bad.
So when did you guys decide to bring her on?
I feel like it was kind of organic, because we were doing the zine. Printing the little thingies, and then
printing books for us, helping us edit, and then you know, at a certain point, it's just like, oh, so now you're just part of the gang.
Yeah, and then I had some time free up because I wasn't at the gallery anymore. You know, just kind of playing Tetris with my free time.
Yeah, it just kind of naturally happened, and we'd all known each other for so long before then that I was like, yeah, why not? Naomi's a great editor, great designer. Why not? She's a good friend, smart person.
You guys seem like, though, like you like to be transparent, though, with like what you're doing, and you're trying to be seen more by like doing things like this. And if people want to reach out to you and like to get you for an interview, do they just like reach out to the way this happened was I was talking to Tyler Dempsey of his podcast and this other podcaster that we all have this like Twitter group, and I just thought it would be interesting to reach out to. Well, he was saying he had reached out to your publicist to get Blake Butler, and Blake Butler had turned him down, and I thought it'd be interesting to have like stories from your publicist. But then I emailed her, and then she said that you guys would talk, and I was like, oh hell yeah, I'll do that. That's how this happened.
Yeah, we like talking about stuff. If anybody wants to reach out, they should reach out.
Because before, it seemed like you guys were kind of this, like, I didn't know. I just like some conglomeration or something, you know?
We are who we are. Kind of just some conglomeration at the end of the day.
Yeah. You know, we're all sitting in our, you know, what you don't know is that we're all sitting in our high rises right now. We're all fronting right now. It's all why.
Yeah.
That's all in the facade.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. I think I've asked you pretty much. Are there any things that you've learned, I guess, from your misadventures in publishing that you did not know before? What do you take? Are there life lessons?
There are affirmations.
Right. I mean, in general, I feel like you just have to be like, there are really good moments to deploy being kind of hot tempered, because I am kind of a hot tempered person. But I think just working in any kind of space where you're like, it's free labor and you're also kind of, you know, the stakes are very low for everybody, but it's very important, like inside, you just need to be very patient with people. And I think that, this has helped me to become, this sounds corny, but it's helped me to become like a more patient, think before I speak type of person, for sure.
Yeah, I think patience as well, for sure. Yeah. Patience in the process, not with people, but like the process of it happening.
What's the, like, the submission process?
And I think attention to detail, attention to detail as well.
Yeah.
What did you say?
What is like the submission process? Like, do you reach out specifically to people, or do you ever do like an open call, or
both?
Both.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's, yeah, it's pretty much both. People cold submit us, send us stuff, or, people will put out a call or something like that, you know?
How quickly can you tell when something's like really bad that you're not going to publish?
Well, I don't know if you ever make like the judgment call that something is bad.
Because
I
feel
like
the taste is so great. You know, like I'll just never forget, like, one time I like applied to be like a fiction reader at the New Yorker, which like anybody can do. And they send you 3 stories. And, you know, yeah, I got to give like a page. And for each one, I was just like, you know, just going in on how this was the worst thing ever. And then like, they just printed them in the next 3 New Yorkers. I was like, okay, so what the fuck do I know? Like, I think this is dog shit, but it's literally in the New Yorker, the next 3 issues. So,
but
who knows? Yeah, so what the fuck do I know?
For me, I can tell that I like something, or like, I can tell that something is for me probably within the first like 5 pages, just based off of the quality of the prose. Because like, something can always be a good story, and like, I love a good story as much as the next person. And again, then there's poetry and there's prose, there's theory. So it's like each genre has to be approached differently. But I think most people would tell you, unless they're doing like romanticy, which like you kind of have to see the whole thing to know the story. But I would say for most people, like, it takes a couple of pages. And then, you know, you got to read the whole thing. But otherwise, I'm not full reading every single thing I get. If it's just not, if it's too commercial, for example, I can't read it.
Yeah.
Wait, what does that mean, too commercial?
Like, people who have like we really do get submissions from agents that are like roadmaps to being an entrepreneur, or things that are genuinely, and there's no shade to this really, but like TikTok poetry or Instagram poetry, where it's like, this is for a platform and it doesn't make sense for us to publish this.
Yeah, it's like it's just like considerations. Like, I gotta think of it when something's like super like plotty, you know, like I that's going over my head, you know, like I'm not attuned to the twists and turns of something in a way that I would be in any way a suitable publisher for something that's like a genre book in that sense.
Yeah, you gotta look at like what an editor has published before, you know.
Yeah,
like they don't even know what you guys are doing, and they're like pitching things to you.
Yeah, agents, not authors as much, but agents.
Not authors, agents, yeah.
Well, yeah, I get a lot of agented submissions for things that are just like, how to, like, this person is like a girl boss, like, and this is how she like achieves success. And it's just like, not, I mean, that's like, maybe I should read it to learn from it.
Yeah, but. You do girl boss editions.
Yeah, you gotta.
Or a self-help, like a sub-imprint.
Yeah.
So I know like Ben Fama, like he runs workshops. Would you ever guys like run a workshop from Archway? Like either online or at your bookstore?
I just can't imagine anyone wanting to learn anything from me, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know. Like, you have to come up with like a good syllabus or something. But like you do see a lot of people doing this sort of thing lately. But I just think who, like Nick, that you had a famous author come to your class once in school, and they were like, somebody asked them how they became successful, and they're like, well, you know,
yeah. Yeah, they're just like, well, you know, I don't know, someone just liked it and they published my book. Like, all right.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, workshop, I think maybe it could be cool, but also I agree with Naomi. It's kind of like who would want to hear what I have to say.
You guys don't see yourselves as these big characters.
Hmm?
You guys don't see yourselves not as really. Like big famous characters that need to be like seen.
No, not at all.
Not yet.
I'm not.
My mom cares about me, and she's my biggest fan. That's
We have our friends. Got my mom. That's good enough.
What do you want people to think when people think of Archway Editions? What do you want people to like think of?
Good books. No, I don't know.
No, true.
Yeah,
that's a lame answer, but like
we publish that they like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. That's all just it is. Like,
it's like when I think of a publisher that I like, it's because I'm thinking of like two or three books that I like meant a lot to me, you know, that I'm extrapolating because like I value the whoever put them out, but it's ultimately that's what it's about.
Have any of the books that you publish have like had a significant effect on your life by from reading it? Like has been like art, you know?
I mean, I would say the books that I've edited definitely, because they're books that like not books like I would have written them, but they're books that I look to because the prose to me is so saturated and like I'm reading it as a reader, like not as an editor. And then I eventually read it as an editor, but it's like I'm reading it because I'm having a good time. So yeah.
It's like for like Molly, I was like, this is instantly this is like one of the most my favorite and most important books to me that I've ever read. And I can't believe I'm publishing this.
Did you suggest any edits to Blake or anything? Or was it like pretty much good?
Well, it was mostly just because it was so in flux in his mind and he was changing it from beyond what I had read at first. And so a lot of it was just trying to like manage that flow.
Was it difficult? Was it difficult talking to him because of the subject matter of the book?
No, I mean, I think especially given the subject matter of the book, it was not at all, which is like, you know, I don't know how I did it.
Did you see it more as like, is it possible to not like consider the subject matter? Like just think of it as like a book of text? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Well, I think that's the magic thing about it is that it is very hot and in it, but at the same time, it's thought out and considered. And that's the alchemy of it.
And you guys are putting out a new book by him too? Called like Void.
Yeah, it's the he had published it through Riverhead as Alice Knott in 2020.
Oh.
This is the first time it's been in paperback. So we got the rights for them to do paperback, and there's a new preface and it looks way cooler.
Wait, this is Alice Knott?
Is Alice Knott?
Yeah.
Oh wow. How do you get the rights to something? Do you just like email someone?
Pretty much.
And they're like, okay, here you go.
Yeah.
I don't imagine that would always be the case with certain books, but with this one.
Yeah. But this one in particular, they're just like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think it did.
Have
really
you tried to get rights before and like were denied?
We reach out for rights, you know, for images for covers and stuff like that. And we seem to have pretty good luck. I think if you are just, it depends on who you're dealing with. Wow. But if you're looking for images rights for artwork, unless you're dealing with like the Avedon estate, you're going to get a good reception if you put your heart into explaining like why you want to use the image on like a commercial product or whatever. Like what is the meaning? What is the tether to you in the text or to you in the image? I think you can always work something out.
Yeah.
I don't think people are assholes. Martin Wong
was one estate.
Oh.
For Charles's book was one that said no, but
yeah, whatever. They said they were getting like too many requests or something.
Yeah, they were getting a lot of requests because I think his work was just in a show or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
one book I tried to acquire once that came out in the UK, and it was just like a year long negotiation that it went nowhere because everybody's kind of confused about like which. Who's bringing the contract?
It never came out.
Yeah. So that's some stuff like that happens, but I feel like that's like, you know, it's all part of the thing, you know. I wouldn't trade it.
Or is there anything you guys want to promote that you have like coming up?
Well, our two books coming out. We have The Boyd Corporation from Blake, and then Last Poems by John Ferris, which me and Nick have been working on editing for like 8 years.
8 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, since before Archway. It was like a neighbor.
Yeah.
I used to live in Bullet Space, which is like an old squat turned artist co-op in the Lower East Side, and he was my next door neighbor, John Ferris, and he's just like this legendary poet figure who in his day was not published that much, and after he passed away, me and Nick were given by our co-editor, Andrew Castrucci, who also founded Bullet Space, just like a big box of all of his last poems that he'd been working on. And so we just spent years and years transcribing them and scanning them and putting them together in a book. And now we have a publishing house and we're going to publish them.
Really? Yeah. Now it's coming out.
Yep. What were you going to do initially? Or were you just like working on it without a plan?
Yeah. That's
kind of. I think we had grand ambitions to like go to like MIT Press or something like that, but or like try and find like a university press like, or you know, a book publisher or something.
Eight years.
I think ago, at one point we even were like, "Well, Daniel White publishes as a powerhouse."
And how did the editing process like come together? Like organizing that into a book? Is that like? Is there like an arch to it? I guess I'd have to read it.
Yeah, we can send you a PDF. I mean, it's, you know, it's just taking the scans of his poems and putting them next to the transcriptions. And then he has these drawings and pieces of it at the end of his life. And it's all, you know, it's a pretty powerful hard fact.
Well, thank you guys for coming on. This has been really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No problem.
All right.
See ya.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye.